Okay.
All right. Welcome to the Pet Life Podcast. As always, I'm Patrick. And today I have with me my man. Becoming brothers, becoming Aloha spirit mindset already. Alika, how do you pronounce your last name? Is it Nihe?
Yeah, Spawn Nihe.
All right, Spawn Nihe. Sorry about that. What's going on, Alika?
No problem. Yeah, it's pretty great. Having a good time today and beautiful Sunday. And grateful to be here. I'm glad you made a connection through Tony. Tony's a brother. He's awesome. Yeah. And anything that happens through him is usually amazing. So, well, it always has been so far.
Awesome, man. Well, yeah, it's just kind of quick. I know we chat a little bit, but a little backstory, you know. So Tony Merkel with the Confessionals podcast, I caught wind of him through Tripoli's podcast, which was like, whoa, this is interesting. So I just started laying in, listening, and I just was admiring the artwork. I was like, man, this is cool. Like, creepy, really interesting. I was like, this is great. And then he obviously on one of the episodes he started mentioning you and you doing the artwork. He's like, oh, he's from Hawaii. I was like, oh man, I'm so interested in all this stuff. And this guy's in Hawaii. You're on the Big Island though, right?
No, I'm here. I'm in Oahu.
Oh, where in Oahu are you?
Yeah, I'm up at Mililani Tech, but it's Waiwa.
Yeah. Okay, cool, man. Yeah, so I'm down in Aina Haina.
Okay.
Bro, dude, that just changed this whole game. For some reason, I thought you were on the Big Island. Once we get off, we'll chat more, man. I'd love to meet you and catch up, dude. This is even better. Whoa. Yeah. So anyway, you said you were from Hawaii, and I was like, you know what? I need to reach out to this guy. Obviously, he's looking at your page. So all the amazing artworks, not just for his show, but, you know, the art that you do, which I'd love to kind of learn more about, kind of how you got into that. But yeah, man, I was just like, I want to know more about it. And right before we jumped on, one thing you mentioned was anywhere you go, if you start to just kind of see how things are done locally, you know, for the most part, you're going to be accepted, which I, as an outsider, I want to believe that. And I've gotten nothing but that since being here. Yeah. So maybe if it's possible, you know, maybe just talk about the energy of Hawaii, the Aloha spirit, all those things that make Hawaii so special in that regard to the locals. If you want to maybe dive into that first.
Okay. What I said earlier was just, if you honor the place, it's a universal principle. If you honor the place that you're at, then you'll be welcomed in. Right. So, Aloha is way deeper than, just hello, goodbye, or love. You know, it's way deeper than that. It's a state of mind. It's a way of being. To have compassion for the person across from you, the person that you're looking at, as well as having your own boundaries, because that's Aloha as well. You know, you just don't behave in a way that is going to create any kind of dissonance or pain or suffering around you. So you're just there to be a benefit to yourself and to everybody around you. To me, that's what Aloha is.
Yeah, I mean, one thing that I've gathered too is there's a lot of gratitude. Like, there's a lot of gratitude all around, right? Gratitude, absolutely. First and foremost, self. Which, when you have gratitude for yourself, and you know, love, you know, appreciation, you have gratitude for the land. You have gratitude for your fellow man. You know, all those pieces, and you know, at least with that, is I feel that becomes a resonance, right? It actually does. So when you're here, and maybe from a local standpoint, being that you get so many hollies, which we can describe more, is it like, can you get the energetic feel where people are caring, like, all right, this person's chill? Like, do you get that? Like, the locals are like, all right, they're coming in. We get a vibe before we've even chatted with them. Like, is that something that's pretty much a thing here?
Yeah, our antenna is pretty sensitive here. We can see when somebody is not going to be a good fit. Yeah. And it's usually about an attitude and the way you carry yourself. If you come into an environment and you walk around acting as if I'm going to make this place better, then it's just like, before you even learn about it, then it's just kind of like, I don't know. Even then, like, you could be nice and everything, but if you're trying to change things because you see it as, oh, I can make this place better, which was the missionary mindset, right? It came in, and you look around and you have your beliefs and you look at everybody around you and like, oh, well, they're not following my beliefs. So I want to make them better. I want to save them, you know, like, so,
oh, dude.
Right. So then you come in with that attitude, even with the best intentions, it's not going to be a good fit. It's going to be harmful. So
totally.
A lot of people who come today, if you come in with a curious attitude and, like you said, grateful to be here, just being around everybody, looking around and seeing how you can contribute to the betterment of everything on right. your own, not trying to change people.
Hey, right.
And that's how it works. Yeah.
Dude. And that's so fascinating because, you know, as I was saying, my fiance went to school here growing up, and we were just talking about how expensive schools are, all these, you know, whatever. And at one point, she said something, and then nothing like nefarious or anything. She was just like, you know, it's just in order to get a good education here, it's so expensive, which, you know, it becomes problematic. And I go, I think you're missing the bigger point here. And I'm not one of those people who is like, you know, oh, the whites or oh, this color, this. It's just a matter of, okay, as you said, are people trying to play God? Are they trying to change people? Doesn't matter where you are. Are you a good person? Do you have good intentions? Do you have gratitude? All that jazz. And I told her, I was like, I think we're missing a bigger picture here. I go, a lot of the locals here, from what I've gathered and observed, there's such an appreciation for the land. And that's where a lot of education has come from. And this is also from people's words, not mine. And I go, so putting them into school, I go, this is from, you know, the white man coming in, as you just said, bringing this education. And I go, yeah, I get what it's doing. I go, but if we're really trying to like understand this place, it's like that all of the stuff you learn in the classroom, you're going to find here. It's in the land. It's all around us. And I go, and quite frankly, I'm like, you know, we're trying to force everyone into these systems because of whatever. And she was like, and she, you can see her wheels spin. She's like, oh, I didn't even like think of it. I'm like, I'm not shaming you. Like, she knows where I stand on this. I'm like, I'm not shaming you. I'm just, I see how you see it that way. I go, but you know, it seems there is a different mindset with the locals in that. So maybe, you know, maybe if you want to chime in on that.
Dude, you're 100% correct. Absolutely. Actually, one of the main things I do is work with a place-based education nonprofit headed by Kay Fukuda. She is the director. And on the west side in Nanakuli High School, I'm a part of a PALS program. And it's basically a place-based learning where the main point of it all is to reconnect you to the place you're at, because that gives you a sense of home, identity, and a real education around, you know, about everything around you. If you learn the land, it is a portal to learning yourself and everything else you need to understand in the world.
Dude,
your whole lab is right outside.
That's awesome. So what are some of the things that you guys do to implement that kind of regaining, establishing self in the land kind of?
So I'm a game designer and an artist. So I have a game design company with my wonderful friends, my brothers, Jeffrey Vieira and Jack Hobbs. It's called Theory Craftist Games.
Oh, cool.
And so as part of this PALS program, this place-based program, we go into classrooms and we teach students how to design a game. But through that, this game is usually based in Hawaii. And right. It's based on Hawaiian culture. So through the process of making this game, we're also teaching the culture, cultural tenets, and facts about the area, things about the area that you might not have known if you hadn't dived into this project to make a game.
That's really cool, man. Nice. Yeah. Dude, and that's where it's at, man. It's all about just going, okay, like you said, I'm not trying to change people. It's just like, hey, do you know, like, as simple as like this plant that is around you all the time? Yeah, I know it because it's the state flower. Okay, cool. Great. But do you know this one? Do you know anything about it? Not really. Okay, let's just learn a little bit more about this place. And then from there, dude, like, I can imagine the amount of, you know, I don't know if you have any like internship programs or like kids coming to you being like, hey, we want to learn more about this. Do you see a lot of that happening? I can imagine.
Yeah, man, that actually just started happening. This year is the first time we're taking on an intern. So it's wonderful. So our first, it started as Jeff and my business or company. And Jeff invited me in first. And so he invited me into the PALS program. I worked with him for about 2 years in this program. And then we started a game design company. And the third member of our team was actually my first student that I got to teach.
Whoa.
So yeah, his name is Jack Hobbs. He's amazing. You know, when we met him, he started off with, he had some learning disabilities and he's on the autism spectrum. But it's as if everything completely disappeared and normalized when we all started working together, because he had a place to express himself and improve himself based on his own wants and standards, you know? So
yeah, man,
you got to learn who he is, and he's just the third member now. And it's like he's always been with us, and it's amazing. So this year is the first time we're bringing on an intern, one of our students from this year's class. She's a junior. She's coming along. She actually asked me during class, hey, how do I get this job? Just straight up. Yeah, how do I get the job you have? I was like, well, I just kept drawing until somebody decided to bring me along. And we were having a blast after that. She's like, okay, how can I do that? And so I kept that in mind. And towards the end of the year, about 3 weeks ago, actually. Yeah, 3 weeks, we asked her, you want to come along with us? We're going to be doing a summer program with the Epic Foundation. And yeah, you can come along, learn what we do and work with some kids. And she's stoked. So I'm excited for this summer.
That's awesome, man. I can imagine just from the local standpoint, right? Like, you know, a lot of people from an outside look at places and they don't quite understand how much is happening at the local level of people trying to do what's right for the local community. And it might be small things at first, but it's nonstop. And it's great to hear these stories because, like you said, man, you get the story about, you know, the Peach family and all those families that come here. Maybe we could talk more about that if you want to dive in, but it's just like, this intention, whether good or not, I don't know all the details. Maybe you can chime more on that, but it's like this idea of changing people. And I think that's one of our biggest things in life that a lot of us deal with, myself included, man, especially when we start waking up to what's going around the world, you want to wake people up sometimes and you want to, you know, unfortunately, as much as you don't want to admit it, you're trying to change people's mindset and you go, I can't change your mind. It's not my job to change your mind, but what can you do? It's about, you know, providing services, goods and services where people can get inspired, get excited, curious, and be like, let's look more. I want to know more about what you're doing. Why are you so happy and you know, loving and aloha when everything maybe seems like it's going crazy? And it's like, oh, because I'm doing this and we're helping others. And it's like, oh, all right, I want to get in on that.
Yeah. It's interesting you mentioned that too. I think, as you were talking, you know, my brain started going. That's how awesome conversations work. But so I think what really makes us peaceful and loving, the aloha spirit, I think it can be seen in or attributed mostly to a direct connection to something greater than yourself. And that is aina, that is everything around you. So if you are connected to that, every single day and at all points of every decision you make is geared towards that benefiting everything around you, as a steward of the land and the people around you, then it gives you that. It grants you this peace. It grants you this calm and love. Yeah. And it's kind of, it's comparable to, but you know, I'm biased. I think greater than a relationship with an external entity. I am in a relationship with everything around me, the ground beneath my feet, the air above me, the air that I'm breathing in, the plants that provide me nutrition, the animals, everything around me at all times. So I feel like that's just a direct visceral connection to be greater and to be beneficial.
Yeah. Absolutely, man. And I talk about it all the time, especially with this podcast. The PAT is obviously my name, but it stands for Present Awareness Training. And I've built an entire, you know, brand now based off of this idea of just not idea, but this concept of, you know, understanding what it means to be in the present moment and having awareness of being when you're present, knowing what that feels like, knowing every, like you said, all the senses that go with it. And then learning how to obviously train that and make that, you know, habitual. So like many of us, when we feel we've lost our appreciation, gratitude for the moment, it's knowing, hey, can I get myself back to that place? Because I also have a background in personal training. I've been doing it for over 10 years. And one of the biggest things is, you know, everyone's like, I want to do it perfect. I want to do things perfect. And I've come to realize this idea of perfect is these, like, again, it's almost like a perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect. And it's never, we're never in that. And, you know, as much as we want to get in the zone, that's kind of getting you closer, but it's always learning how to get back to this place, get back to that space of, as you said, it's not just physical training, but spiritual training, emotional training. And a lot of that comes back to, like we said, gratitude and everything else. And that's the, for me coming here, knowing what I knew before we got here, but also being here now, observing, experiencing it, that's something that I really value. And one of the things, maybe you can clarify a little more about where it comes from, but you know, when we moved here, everyone was like, hey, what's going on, uncle? What's up, auntie? And I was like, at first I was like, what? I'm like, what? Why are you telling my kid to call you uncle? Like, I didn't know, like, you know, I wasn't quite sure what was going on, but I was like, all right, I'll listen and see. And then come here, like, oh, this is what you do. This is what you call everyone auntie and uncle. So now, you know, when I do it with other people, I'm like, oh, say hi to auntie. And people who aren't here, they're like, what are you doing? I'm like, this is just what you, it's a thing here. And it's, and I'm getting it more, but maybe you can elaborate on like what that means about, you know, calling everyone almost like family.
Yeah. That's a really interesting and unique thing about a lot of indigenous cultures, I think, are that way too, because it's the same way with Filipinos as well. When you have generation. So in the societal structure is built in generational tiers. So you have your parental generation, which is mom, dad, uncle, auntie, and they all deserve the same amount of respect. And then you also have your kupuna generation, your elder generation, utmost respect. And then you have your generation. So everybody's a cousin, you know, so everybody, it's everything is described and seen in a family dynamic. And yeah, that's interesting too. Because muku au hau, which is genealogy, mm-hmm. incredibly important for Hawaiians. You have to know where you come from. And a lot of our genealogies, you can link all the way back to Papa and Wakea, the sky father and earth mother. So you are linked to creation, mm-hmm. generationally, familial. It's a real relationship. So I think that's where it comes from initially, is that you are linked to all creation. And so everyone around you is your family as well.
Right. And it's also, I think, even to further extrapolate on that, it's be knowing, like, you know, if there is problems, there's things like that, at the end of the day, you are all family in the sense of coming from creator, creation, right? And knowing, you know, we all come from the same soil. We come from, you know, simply said, same lineage or genealogy, whatnot. And it's just having then respect, right? And I feel that that's a big thing that I've at least learned here, is like just having respect, you know, even if you see, you know, like, for example, I've seen locals throwing trash on the ground. I've seen other locals pick it up. I've seen, you know, people who aren't locals pick it up. And it's not saying one's doing better or the other. It's just saying, like, observing, being an observer of like, oh, okay, it's happening everywhere, but it's on us as a community saying, hey, it's cool. Like, I'm here to help you out, or, you know, and hopefully we're all here to help each other out and then obviously help the land out. You see it all the time with, at least on the beaches, when you see like sea monks, right? The monk seals. Yeah. You see everyone's respecting the space of these animals. You're respecting it. They're always talking about the sun blocks that they can bring in the ocean now, try not to let it smear off in the ocean, you know? Yeah. So there's stuff like that I've noticed on those things. Now, obviously, there are government things that, you know, like the petroleum getting pumped into the water, that's a whole thing. But it is like, as I feel like the locals and the people who really do want to try to live to the aloha and respect to the land, you see it happening all around. And it's not, again, not one's doing better. It's just everyone's there to pick each other up to the best that we can. So and that's something for myself that I want to, again, respect and know when I come here, like, hey man, how do I be respectful to that? Like, you know what I mean? Right now, my son's 2.5, and you know, just ultimately building this kids camp where it's like, I want something that's affordable that everyone can use, right? Like, and finding something that, like, locals, that maybe money's tight, or people who live here that money's tight. It's like, this is a place where kids can go, but we're going to learn about the land. We're going to play, we're going to engage, and not, you know, everyone has to be away from each other, but like we can be aloha. We can breathe. We can laugh. We can, you know, try to figure out the world around us, especially. So, you know, I'm trying to do my part in that. Right. And it's, you know, just trying to essentially take what skills I have and go, all right, I'm here as like a, in many ways, I'm here as a servant to the land. Like, how do I help this place? Right. You know, we go to the petting zoo with my son and we help, like, you know, little here and there, he's little, to volunteer with the animals, volunteer with the locals who run it. You know what I mean? So we do things that we can to start, you know, just truly doing, all right, well, what part can we play? What do we have? Right. So, that's,
so if you're interested in that, there are countless opportunities where you can work with the land and learn a lot about the culture and help the land at the same time. In basically every valley here, there's going to be one group that does that, at least one group that does that on the weekends or twice a month. So in your area, I believe, I do know of a Pia Valley. Mm-hmm. You heard of Pia Valley?
Yeah.
And then they're reconstructing the walls and all that. Have you done that?
I haven't done that specific. I'm aware of what's going on, but I don't know like the ins and outs of it. Just know that it's going down.
Okay, a perfect opportunity for culture education, a little physical exercise, and the kids can come too.
That's awesome. Well, even one of the things that, and I've only done it once, but like Cocoa Head, for example, they're trying to reset the trail.
Yeah.
And they, you know, for those who don't know, Cocoa Head's like a basically a mountain that you can hike. It's like, what, a mile and a half? And
static treadmill.
Right, exactly. Stairmaster. it drains you, man. But what's cool is they have the gravel, they have the wood, they have whatever you need, and people can volunteer and just bring stuff up to the next spot that needs, you know, support. And, you know, that's kind of how they rebuild it. And, you know, that's what I think is really cool is you can just, you know, you don't have to make it a spectacle. You can literally just go pick up some material, supply, and bring it to the, and it's easy to see where it needs, where they kind of finish the last bit. So it's just little things like that to do your part. You know, and I think that's like anything else, right? You know, we're in a society where everyone's moving, people are getting further away from maybe what is home to other places. And it's to your point in the beginning, man, it's like, if that's the case, okay, it is what it is. It's the times we're in, but it is having respect because there's a reason the locals and people who've lived wherever it may be have been there for so long, is because there's a way of doing things and there's a respect of doing those things. And, you know, for whatever reasons, right, if the ups and downs of every place, we're going to experience them. And it's just knowing how to be there and be respectful and be present with the land, because, you know, you look at how lush it is here, right? But if you're doing things on your own properties or places where you're causing more problems, you know, you're affecting every, not just the people around you, but the entire island, man. You see it, you see it everywhere. So yeah, man, I can go on about this. I'm just kind of ranting now, but is there anything you want to add before we kind of shift a little bit?
Oh yeah. Everybody contributes to, problems and solutions. So I think that's the main mindset here. Everybody contributes to something.
That's great, man. I love it, dude. And once we get off, I want to maybe pick your brain more about these different opportunities. And if it's like a spot I can go check it out pretty easily. If you have one, like a website or something that might be an easy, but yeah, so let's talk about your art here. Cause I want us to kind of gear this up into some of that cryptid mindset and understanding what's going on the island. So for those listening, I want to just paint this picture of the beauty of it, what you do, your background, and then ultimately what else is going on here. So tell us a little bit about, I know you mentioned it before with your company, but you're an artist. What kind of art is it that you're doing? I know you're doing the designing, but what else is on your...
Yeah. So I do digital art and traditional art, visual artist. At this current time, and I love it, I get to work on mainly cultural art. So it has to do with my Hawaiian culture, and through doing the art, I get to study. So it's just a great excuse for me to spend 2, 3, 4, 5 days on one subject and just reading up and learning and letting it build this visual bank in my head and then put it down on art. So yeah, that's what I do. I do drawing and painting digitally and traditionally.
Nice. Yeah. So what are you currently looking into, and is there, what kind of gravy do you have with it?
So currently the current project that we're working on is a game called Hoakawa. So it's a war game. So it's a war game, a card game based on ancient Hawaiian warfare. There you go. So it's a simple game, but it's focusing on the tactics and weapons that the ancient Hawaiian warriors would use in their battles. And I just wanted to make a card game about this. Well, me, Jeff, and Jack, we wanted to make a card game about this because when I was looking into it, I was really surprised at how structured it was, the act of warfare in ancient Hawaii. I mean, I knew that there were seasons. There was Makahiki season where there's no war, and then there's cool season where there's war. So I knew that before. But then later on, I started digging in more. As an adult, I started learning more about the structure of it, and just learning that there's protocol, that there is a kahuna that comes in and he has to do a prayer and give a sacrifice there. And you're protecting the ali'i, and you're guiding the ali'i, who is the chief. And then the chief comes in, and there's always like a volley of stones that comes first. There's all these different things that have to click and work together. And it was so fascinating. So I wanted to make a game about it. And to me, there's no better way to learn something than to learn how to make a game about it, because you're essentially soaking in the reality and the facts, and then creating a world for other people to play in. So if you want to create a convincing world, you better know about that world. And so that's a wonderful way to educate yourself. And it's a fun way to learn as well, because if you're playing a game about it, you know, you have this motivation to learn what the rules are and what you're doing so that you can win. And so that's where this game came out. And even the title itself. So Hoakawa means companion in battle, or companion in hardship or strife. So kawa in Hawaiian is war. Mm-hmm. Hoa is the prefix for someone intimate to you or someone close to you in any given activity or context. So the word for friend is hoa aloha, companion in love. The word for, I guess you could say enemy. We don't have a word for enemy. So that's another interesting thing too. Hoa kawa, companion in war. So either way,
right,
no matter what's happening, there's no real like good guy, bad guy. We're companions in either loving each other or warring with each other. We're companions for equal. Yeah.
Isn't that interesting? It's going like, it almost in some ways is like, this tiff between us is not personal. Like, yeah. I don't have, obviously we're in war and there's like, may the best man win kind of thing. But it's almost like this idea, right? Like the UFC now, you know, even though it's got its own issues, but it's like that we're going to fight, but only then it was like, no, one of us isn't going to come out of here. Like truly one of us will not make it out of here, but I still love you. Like we're companions here. Like, you know, like, and I think that's so, it's such an interesting mindset, right? It's like, that respect and honor you have for someone's, like the fact that you're standing in front of me, I already have so much respect for you more than I do like maybe someone who's a coward. But even then, it's like,
exactly. Still, yeah.
Still, you know, they're still a companion. So that's so cool, man. Interesting.
Yeah. So thank you. So that's our current art, more my current art that I'm working on for our game Hoakawa. So it's a lot of study about, you know, warriors, the different weapons. It's just so fascinating. Like one of my favorite weapons that I learned about and I like to read about is called the pikoi. So if you saw like old school kung fu movies, where they have the chain and the bar, the chain knife, right?
Yeah.
Always fascinating to me. I love that weapon because it's just such a, like, how do you do that? How do you control that? Yeah, you just have this wiggly thing and you're turning it into this, like you're an extension of your consciousness, man. It's crazy. So
brutal force, bro.
It's
spirals of life, man. You're just using spirals to create your energy.
Yep.
Dang.
Exactly. So seeing that, I love that. And just learning about things like that, learning, going deep on the history of the weapons. I wish I could find how we developed that on our own, or if that was passed down, because I don't know if you know about the Hawaiian or the Polynesian migration theory that is out currently, where we come from Southeast Asia and the culture continues to develop as we come down the chain. So maybe we got it from there, you know, maybe it's a genetic memory somehow. I don't know, but it's just fascinating to see the similarities and to see how skilled these people were, how skilled my people were. Like, man.
Well, there's also kind of on the migration, but have you delved into at all, like the idea of possibly of like Lemuria being out here?
Absolutely, man. Yeah. So,
is it any validity in your mind to that?
100%. Totally. Of course, I don't have the evidence to be like, look, but yeah, I 100% agree with that. It's known as Mu.
Mu.
Here.
Mu.
Mu. Yeah. So Lemuria.
M-U?
Yes.
Mu? Okay.
M-U. Yeah.
Yeah.
And in our ancient Mo'olelo, on Mu, that was like Hawaii is the mountaintops of the sunken continent.
You're at the tip of it. Yeah. 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 Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I got that. I get that vibe. And when you look at the, because essentially for those who don't know, maybe let's start with, because this is family who've reached out, like, I'm so confused on where you are. So Hawaii is the country, like the state, there's 8 islands, correct me if I'm wrong, 8 or 9?
8 inhabited, but there's a whole long chain beyond that, yeah.
Well, I'll let you go from here. So there's 8 that are inhabited that, you know, people know about is Oahu, or Honolulu, that's the one we're on. There's Maui, everyone knows about Maui, that's its own island. Yep. There's Big Island, which is, what's the name of the Big Island again?
It's Hawaii Island.
Just Hawaii Island, okay. And then what were the other ones, if you wanna chime in?
So I like to start from Hawaii Island. So there's Hawaii Island, and then you come up and then you go to Maui, and then you have Molokai, and then you have Koho'olawe, and Lanai. So those are all in the Maui County area, all within Maui County. And then you go to Oahu, and then you have Kauai, and then you have Ni'ihau.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And now you said 8 are inhabited. Now, which one, I think it was the last one you just said, the one that's like private, like it's like a privately owned island. Which one was that?
So that's Ni'ihau.
Ni'ihau, that's okay, yeah. Yeah, Ni'ihau?
Yeah, Ni'ihau.
Ni'ihau. Okay, yeah. So who owns it? Do you know?
Let me look into that.
Because I'm just curious, because from what I've gathered, that's where...
Sure, the Robinsons. Yeah, the Robinsons.
The Robinsons? Yeah, okay. So for those who don't know, there's a lot of families that have come and obviously taken over this place. or they believe they have by putting their names on stuff and establishing in that regard. There's one island that we're talking about, Ni'ihau, that is privately owned. You can't go there. Now, I believe that some, like, there people hunt animals on that island. There's the ability to go and hunt for sale. I could be wrong. It might be one of the other islands. I'm trying to wrap my mind if that was the one or if it's another one. But regardless.
Molokai, there's a lot of deer.
Molokai, yeah, they got Maui venison over here is They're big on going over there, because that's a whole thing that I actually brought. Do you know Forage Hawaii? Do you know Jessica, who runs?
No.
So Jessica runs Forage Hawaii. So she basically is the supplier for like all like the local livestock on the islands, and like the freshest of fresh, like best quality that you could possibly get. Anyway, I had her on the podcast because I get meat from her. Anyway, she was talking about just what the influx of the deer have been doing to the population and do it into the soil and things like that. So, you know, as much as people might be vegan or whatever and don't like the cruelty of animals, we were going on about how there's so many that it's literally destroying the soil and destroying the land itself. So there needs to be, you gotta do one or the other, you know, either none of you can live here or we're gonna have to take some of these bad boys out, you know?
Yeah, so, either Deer Island or we gotta start killing them. No.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, but I wanted to bring all that up because going back to your point about there's a chain of islands, because people, and this is why, for those who don't know, Lemuria is supposedly an old, you know, land mass that went underwater. Some people think it's Atlantis. I don't know any of that. I just know that we're in the middle of an ocean. there's chains of islands that run across. And when you look in and people have done snorkeling and excavations beneath the land, there's been, they found a lot of what appears to be old ancient civilizations along this path. Anything else you want to add to that about these chains? Because that's what I've gotten so far.
Yeah. So I also like to dive into old, you know, ancient history, esoteric stuff, megalithic buildings and or megalithic architecture and the cultures that built them, super into ancient Egypt, because I feel like we're all linked in that way. All the ancient cultures have commonalities.
100%.
So, yeah. So, 100%. Like, there's Hawaiian villages in Alaska. There are big commonalities between Hawaiian culture and some of the indigenous coastal Alaskan cultures and Canadian cultures. Yeah. And then we also have the Pacific Northwest, and going all the way down to Peru, there's links between Peruvians and or ancient Peruvian culture and Rapa Nui or Easter Island. So there's all these connections. I feel like we're all connected. So it pays to learn about that, the ancient history as well. So there was Mu in the Pacific and Atlantis in the Atlantic. Atlantis, I don't know if you know about the Sumerian creation stories and, you know, the Anunnaki and all of that.
Yeah, yeah, I've become more familiar just by talking to people, but I have not read any of it myself. So I can't, I'd be the last person to elaborate on that.
Yeah, so this is all during that time. And so Atlantis was more technology-based, and Mu was more spiritual technology-based. So Atlantis with the physical technology, they would go back and forth. And it wasn't just one landmass. It was a culture that was spread all over the place. So those were the epicenters. And then Atlantis fell. Atlantis got too cocky. They started using a lot of their tech for not good reasons. Atlantis fell. Everybody ended up going to Egypt because everything sunk, or was flooded. So they ended up going to Egypt. They split it in the upper and lower Egypt. You had Atlantis colonies and Mu colonies in Egypt, and then everything went on from there. And Hawaiians ended up learning about our history from the Mu culture. And so this is all, you know, according to the lore. I'm not going to say any of this is fact, but I believe it. So,
right.
Yeah,
you have to always put allegedly.
Allegedly. Of course. Yeah. But there's links between us and our culture and Indian culture, our culture and Egyptian culture. And a lot of that was, you know, Mu based from the lore, from their history. It comes from Mu. So yeah, that's my knowledge so far. The general knowledge I have connection.
What I think is fascinating is because for those who, a lot of people listen to the show are totally like dialed in, like they get what we're talking about, and they're like, this is why we come to listen to the podcast, because when some of this stuff gets brought up, you know, these I've noticed is where I get the most viewership and most responses. Not that the other stuff isn't great, but people want to know this stuff and just the importance of it. But what I find really fascinating is when you start to see these things, learn about them, try to understand a little bit more, it kind of actually in many ways goes to what you're talking about of understanding like your game, that your card game you're creating, of like, take all that information. And now these are the people in these war times creating these weapons, creating these devices, coming up with this aloha spirit of like this companion in war, like it's coming from somewhere. Yeah. And very much, you know, even though it's lore, could it be, you know, where was it coming from? And I think I'm with you is like really trying to dive into that and really explore that, because whether or not you can nail it right on the head of like, this is exactly what happened. It's like, okay, well, there's stuff that's happening that we need to ask questions about. If you want, as you said, know where you are, know the soil in which you stand on. So I think that's super fascinating. And when you take a second, just logic here, and go, we're in the middle of the ocean and it's completely populated. Okay. That right there is already like, how do you find it? Right. And people in the stories I've gathered, mainstream stories, was they came from Polynesia. The Hawaiians came from like the Polynesian islands, tracking birds, That's what I gathered. It's like, oh, we're going to track these birds for hundreds and hundreds of years. I'm in the mindset now, never throw the baby out of the bathwater. Mm-hmm. Could there be validity to that? There's something there. I don't know what I, maybe that is. But with that being said, is that what established this island? I don't think so. I think this, again, to your point, I think there was already something established here. And could it be that they're trying to get back to, you know, Lemire after a flood? Possibly. Like you said, there's epicenters all around. You see it in Peru, you see it up the coast. So, you know, questions need to be asked, right? So anyway, that's, I just find this all super fascinating.
It's connected to the mythology as well, you know, like Mu is the land where there were the Menehune and
we got to talk about that.
So
I didn't mean to cut you off, but Menehune here is a big thing. There's companies, soil companies are named after it, water companies are named after it. Clearly it's a thing.
Yeah.
What is the Menehune for those who don't know?
Okay. So the mainstream idea of Menehune are these tiny little mischievous spirits with special powers. They can be invisible. They can communicate telepathically. The thing that they're most famous for is that they can build things overnight. They're incredible engineers and super industrious, very strong as well. So they're not little people. They're literally like little perfectly formed people. So they look like you and me, but 3-4 feet tall. You know?
If that.
So that's the mainstream idea of Menehune. And then there's this whole history behind it. I particularly don't believe that they're tiny. I think they were actually giants. But that's just based off of stuff I know about ancient New Zealand, Aotearoa. So they have these red-haired Maori people that were giants. In South America, they have these red-haired giant people in their ancient culture as well.
Everyone knows about the Afghan one now, all about the giants in Afghanistan, the red-haired giants in Afghanistan.
The red-haired giants of Afghanistan,
From Tony. I'm actually having L.A. Maruzai, who's on Tony's show. I'm going to have him on as well to talk about that. So, this is all over the place. Yeah, these giants were everywhere and allegedly still are.
Yeah. And we... So even in Rapa Nui, in Easter Island, they have, you know, those moai. So those things that stare out, that very famous, the giant statues, right? That stare out at the ocean. So they have those things on, and they're not hats. They're topknots. And they were originally painted red. Red-haired topknots. So, So there's these links that just connect everything together.
So you think they made the Menehune small people to create a distraction, or do you think?
From what I've read, the depiction of Menehune being small people was post contact, where missionaries and foreigners came in with their folklore, and they had folklore of the fairy or the fae people, and they were usually like these mischievous little spirits are small. And that was the perception of Menehune after contact. But pre-contact, they weren't spoken about as small people.
Interesting.
So, I think they were giants. So I think they were actually huge because we do have some, like in Waipio Valley of the Kings here, there's burial caves. We have this tradition of burying ali'i in caves, in inaccessible caves. We burn away their flesh, collect their bones, wrap it, do a ceremony, and hide it away because the bones contain the mana of the person. So there are 15, 20-foot bones, sets of ali'i bones in these caves. So, of course, this is all mo'olelo. This is all... spoken. This is not written down with evidence or anything like that. But to me, because I come from an oral tradition culture, I believe mo'olelo. I don't need a paper and a group of scientists to come tell me, oh yeah, your history is validated now.
I believe. Totally, yeah. Dude. And this is the thing is, if you look at any, and you know this, I'm just preaching here now, is any tribal tradition, everything was spoken.
Yeah.
It wasn't until in most of these tribes, and I forget where I heard this, but, you know, take it with a grain of salt. It wasn't until they started writing stuff down that it lost its validity. It lost its power. It lost its energetic force that really was the spoken, you know, the spoken oral tradition that, just repeating myself, the oral tradition that occurs in a lot of these tribal communities. And not to kind of sidetrack, but it is on that. Why I also believe it is because I have a good friend who's from here, grew up on North Shore, which, by the way, we'll talk more after because he's in, I also have a background in film and television, and we're actually writing, we're creating a show for Hawaii. So I'll talk to you more about it and pick your brain. Anyway, so he's in the acting entertainment world. And I was, he was telling me about, he has another friend that once has been writing a movie about an experience he had. And this is, and him and I knew, like, in regards to a lot of stuff that's going around the world, like, we're on the same page, but I haven't, like, dove into the cryptid stuff with him yet until this point. And he goes, yeah, man, he goes, I had, my friend's writing a story about my experience with the Night Soldiers. I was like, go on.
Night Marchers.
Thank you. Sorry. Night Marchers. And I go, no way. And I'm like, and I was like, dude, are you messing with me? He's like, and we had never talked about it yet. And this is like, I'm fully deep into the Confessionals podcast at this point. Yeah. So I don't believe in anything at this point, but he's bringing the stuff up about it. And I'm like, okay, I go on. I'm listening. And he goes, dude, I swear on my kid's life, this happened to me. And he goes, and I have multiple people to prove this. And I go, okay, hit me. And he tells me this story, and I'm actually gonna have him on probably the fall, but to talk about it. But anyway, long story short, he was in a friend's, they were over, I can't remember the valley, but they're in a valley where deep into it, the friend that he lived next door to, his family owned like a property on the edge. And then it's just valley. Wow. And so they would go into this valley and they would try to like hunt boar or like they were doing something and they would be in trees. And so the way he describes his experience, and he's like, I got four other people that can attest to everything that I'm saying. He's like, I'm in a tree. I'm trying to lure the boar in. So I'm like over in this tree and I'm on the side of basically this hill. And then on the other side, my buddy's over on a tree that way. He goes, mind you, the brush here, and I forget the name of the actual brush. He goes, is so thick, dude. He's like, I can't go this way. There's no, I have to go this way to get out of where I was.
Yeah.
He goes, in the middle of the night, it's like 9 o'clock. Well, 9, 10 o'clock at night. He's like, I hear these drum sounds coming from the brush.
Ugh.
And hold on. Yeah. So you know this, but for those who don't understand, supposedly this is all lore. You don't look it in the eyes or you don't look at it because you will die. It will take your soul, basically. So he goes, I hear this drumming sound. And he's like, and my friend's over here, like further back off to the side. He's like, I hear this drumming sound and it's like getting louder and it's coming. And so for those who don't understand, and maybe you can elaborate, maybe just before I go any further, what is the night soldiers or the night marchers?
Yeah.
You tell it.
Yeah. So the night marchers are ancient spirits of ancient warriors, ancient Hawaiian warriors, king's guards, basically. So when the Ali'i were so powerful that if they walked outside in the daytime and your shadow fell on them or their shadow fell on you and you were not of the same rank, you just be killed immediately. And so in order to protect everyone as well as their own mana, they would travel at nighttime. Mm-hmm. And they would travel with a procession of soldiers. And that procession still goes to this day. They travel to this day. And it's that's how powerful their mana is. In my belief, that's why they're still here. I guess you could call it a residual haunting in Western terms. But it's not quite residual because it's not just a replay. It is an intelligent.
Yeah.
It's not a haunting. They're just home. This is
right.
they went beyond a dimensional barrier somehow, you know, through that procession. So, and in my beliefs, just thinking about the esoteric side of it, I think perhaps when they were traveling with the Ali'i, they had created some kind of dimensional bubble around them. And so no matter what timeline they're on, they're still doing their procession.
Yeah, they're not stopping, dude. And this goes to show you ancient technologies, dude, spiritual and physical, that is completely, I mean, a lot more people are waking, you know, people like yourself or myself that want to know more, are willing to have the open mind to go, okay, what is out there? What has been out there? Because there's too many of these anomalies or these coincidences, or, you know, obviously shout out again to Tony, like people's own experiences where it's like, you can't ignore that this is really happening because it hasn't happened to you. Maybe you don't fully understand, but the more people actually go back in their life and kind of go through their, you know, Rolodex, they realize like, actually I've had some strange experiences in my life.
Yeah.
I just always was like, oh, it's just this or it's just that. And then you get those extreme ones where it's completely like you, there's no denying what just happened. Yeah. Right. And so with, so now that we've kind of established that this is what's approaching him as he's in this tree.
Yeah.
And he's like, dude, we're in the middle of nowhere. You can hear like you can't hear civilization. And we're on an, so mind you, even though for those who might not realize, even though we're on islands and it's not that big, I can get from the south part, south shore to the north shore in like an hour and 15. There's the middle of this island that's just completely just the jungle, island. Man. Like you're not, there's no one in there. Not that we know of, at least. Well, the Menehune and all these other things possibly, allegedly, could it be? Yeah.
Yeah.
So he's out there right on, like he's in it now. And this is coming towards him. And he's like, dude, it was like he, I don't know. But it's like, boop, 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 like really loud. And he was like, he's like, dude, I like energetically goes, I knew I was like, this is death right now. Like this might be the end of my life. He's like, wow. That type of energy where like fear kicked in because he knew what it was, but it's also like, again, an energetic component, right? Like they're tapping into, you know, like you said, on an esoteric level, they're in something else.
Yeah.
He goes, but what made me like, excuse the language, like shit myself, like truly shit myself, I started hearing the war cries.
Oh my God. Dude,
I know. I'm getting like legit. Oh. And he goes, and I go, and I'm like, and me, as much as I'm like, I totally want to believe, I'm like, are you fucking me? He's like, bro, I have four other people I can reach out to right now to attest to what I'm saying. My friend who's in it heard it too. And he's like, only difference was is he was back there and it was coming towards me. And he goes, and this was crazy. He's like, as I said, this brush. And for those who haven't been on the island, dude, I haven't even gone through brush. Like I've gone through like sticks and weeds. There's some stuff in there that like pokes you. Like it's no joke. Yeah. It's no joke, dude. The grass here, for those who don't know, the grass here has these like little like thorns in them sometimes. Not thorns, but if you're walking barefoot, sometimes you'll you'll get like, oh fuck. So to be out in the woods, and this is coming through that, he's like, now we're dealing with an energetic thing. There's no question about it. This isn't a prank. This like, he's like, so it's coming now up the hill. Cause remember he's on the edge. So it's coming up the hill through that brush. That's, there's no way he would like, he's like, I would have died going through that brush. Cause I'd get cut up so bad. He's like, he goes, bro, I'm at like 15 feet high. And I hear it coming like to the edge of the brush. He goes, I jumped the fuck out and I just ran. He's like, dude, he's like, I ran as fast as I could to, cause they, I guess they had like ATVs or something like parked down. He's like, we got out there and when he goes, bro, when we went to the site where our friends like have the property, he goes, they could hear it. He's like, we could hear it. And so that was this story. He was like, he goes to this day, he goes, I've been out. He goes, but I've never gone back out there. He's like, I won't even go near it. And this is totally like, I want him to go on Tony's show because I want to like have him share the story because it's so intense. But for someone who's a local, like, you know how big of a deal the Night Marchers are.
That's a huge deal.
Bro, like I'm crapping myself thinking about being in his shoes. But yeah, man. But it just goes to show you, like, for those who don't know, it's like this stuff is very, very real. And that's why like this Aloha spirit, like being true to the land, being good to the land, man, is like, because there's energies that aren't residuals. Like you said, they're not hauntings. It's the energy that's already here and it's not going anywhere. That's here. So And I'm not saying if you're doing the Aloha that you might not run into them. I don't know, but it's a matter of going, I'm in someone else's territory. I'm going to be really nice here. Like, I need to be respectful. Like, they're welcoming me whether they want me here. So I'm just going to be as nice as possible here. Let me tidy up. Let me say hello to everybody. Let me help out how I can. Yeah, I'm going to just kind of be to myself. Hey, thank you.
Yeah, it's actually based on the lunar cycle from what I know. So on the last four nights of the lunar cycle are the nights of the gods. So there's on the night of Kane, Po Kane, that's when the night marchers come out. So go ahead and look at the lunar Hawaiian lunar calendar and just don't be out on those nights. Those are the nights where you should be at home sleeping.
Right. And for those who also don't understand, we're talking about inside the going into the island.
Inland.
Inland. Thank you. Sorry, my brain was totally farting there. Inland. Now, mind you, for those who don't know, and maybe you can dive more into this, there is a highway, the one that runs through the mountain to take you into Kailua, from the
H3.
H3. It's the Pali Highway, the Pali Highway.
Yeah, I know. There is Pali Highway, and there's H3 as well.
Okay, so anyway, people say like there's some hauntings on that highway. Is it H3 or is it the Pali Highway?
Oh, both of them. There's hauntings everywhere.
Well, yeah. I'm just saying, so it goes to show you people read this. I can't attest to it, but confirm this. But people say they've seen, heard night marchers off the H3 going through because what happened? There's a tunnel. It's great. It's a highway that gets you from one side to the other, but they had a blast through the mountain.
Yeah.
You get there. Yeah. So yeah. I think, yeah, if you want to maybe add on that.
Wrong done to H3, man. So I read about the development of the H3 highway, and it took so long. It's one of them. I think it's the most expensive highway in the United States or something, but it's
surprise, dude.
Yeah. Cause it took so long to make. It's because there's families that valley, Halawa Valley, is a sacred valley. There are, at the mouth of the valley, there are two heiau. There are a heiau is a temple, mm-hmm. Basically a place of worship. There is a woman's heiau and there is a men's heiau, or a luakini, which is a sacrificial heiau. And luakini can only be built by the highest of chiefs, Ali'i Nui. So it's a big deal when there's a luakini somewhere. That land is important.
Right.
And so at the mouth of Halawa Valley, there is a women's and men's heiau, and H3 runs right between them. Yeah. So to this day, they're still there.
That's like symbolic too. That's like some like an FU to like the symbolic nature of it. Of like, we're gonna penetrate.
Yeah.
Here.
Yes, it's actually been described that way. The raping of the valley.
Oh.
By bringing this concrete straight through, punching a hole into the mountain, and then going out the other side.
Yep.
Yeah.
Dude, well, being a visitor at this time, I'm not even making this up, dude. Every time I go through that valley, if I do take that path, we have friends in the Kailua side, I always say thank you. I know I had nothing to do. I literally will say this out loud. If I'm by myself, I go, I'm sorry, even though I had nothing to do with this, but thank you for letting me go through this valley. Yeah. Dude, because being here and just hearing all the stuff that I hear, again, all the stuff I research, whether or not it does anything, I don't care. It does a lot for me energetically, because I know from what I've heard, stories, experiences that people have, and knowing the value of this land, man, because if you think about it, right? Like, our conveniences literally destroy the land. There's they make movies about it. They make songs about it. It's no mystery here, but it's knowing, okay, well, what are the ramifications of that? You know, on multiple levels, right? So, you know, when you see it like that and you understand that the history a little bit more of, like you said, you have the woman's mound and the men's, you know, hill or mountain. It's like, and we're cutting right through it to give you guys convenience, you know, to what cost, I guess. That's always the question, right? With comfort and convenience.
Yeah. What are you going to give up? If you're going to give up your connection, it's not worth it.
Dude, and here's a question, because talking about what are you going to give up, is that one of the most car accident type spots, just because it's so winding and so do you know about that? Because I feel like from what at least I've seen is you have those off ramps, right? Like people, if you go too fast, like you have a spot to drive off on. And I have no information on this, but is there a lot of accidents that happen on that one that you're aware of? Cause I know on H1, there is always something, but that's just because it's tight.
Yeah. I don't know. I do know the accidents. I don't know if it's the place with the most accidents, but I do know that the accidents can get pretty gnarly because the speed limit is higher there. But I know in Kunia area, in the Plains area, Central Oahu, that place has a whole bunch of accidents.
Right.
Yeah.
And would you say there's like total energetic type, like there's an energy that's happening with that, or?
Yeah, I would say so. And not enough lighting, but I would say so, definitely. Anywhere that's out of the way and you're just building a road there so it's more convenient. And by the way, all the roads are built for the military to begin with. Like all of our roads were built for military, except, you know, residential roads. I should say highways and major byways. Yeah. But whenever you do that and you're building it through somewhere that's completely out of the way, just for your convenience, there's a reason why nothing is there.
Oh yeah.
Don't put something there. There's a reason nothing's there. It's meant to be left alone and sacred.
Yeah. No, totally, man. And you see that too. Like if you just look at a map of Hawaii, like where you'll see the valleys and you'll see like just roads and like, they're like, could you build residential there? Sure. But there's also like, and I don't know this for sure, but I feel like the people behind the scenes are like, all right, we've done enough damage. Like we start building, like we're going to see some night marchers are going to be showing up to our door, basically. And be like, boom, book-a-boom, bro, what the heck? You know what I mean? Like, because I mean, you could see it, right? And that's what is so fascinating, which is what they're doing is they're just building more high rises now in, you know, the Waikiki area and right in town. So it's like, you know, they're just like, let's just keep building where we are. Let's just, you know, anywhere out there, like we're taking too much of a gamble. We've done enough damage. But yeah, dude, that's the stuff that just blows my mind. And let me ask you, have you had any experiences with any of the ancient folklore, anything like that?
With ancient spirits? No. It's interesting. I have experiences of, It's not, I know they're not Hawaiian spirits. I should say that, you know, like I've never had bad encounters with what I know to be a traditional spirit.
Interesting.
Everything has been more of the foreign energies. So all my experience, I've shared a couple of them on Tony's show. All of my experiences are like house hauntings, local hauntings, where it's a spirit of that land, but who is linked to that land, but it's not like a Hawaiian spirit.
Right.
I've personally never had bad experiences with Hawaiian spirits.
Interesting. So would you say then, like you, and maybe you already just said this and I'm asking the question again, it's someone who's maybe not from here that has brought a spirit, or they are their spirit who's come to the land, passed away or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, it's more of a, like, for example, my ex-fiance, when I was at her house, I learned that her house is super haunted. And she lives in Pearl City.
No, dude. Pearl City's got... Yeah. I got to think about Pearl City, but keep going.
Please, let's share with me after this. Totally. Her house is haunted by this little boy spirit. And I guess that little boy had died in the house. And so that I would have really weird experiences with that spirit. My old house in Kalihi, there was, it wasn't a demon, I would say, but it was very, it would disturb me quite a bit. That one was more, it was more of like a, it felt like a land spirit, like some, just it, not good presence there, but it wasn't Hawaiian, you know?
Interesting. So not to be nosy, but like what kind of experiences did you have with this? Not demonic, but like whatever this foreign spirit.
Okay, so that's one that I shared on Tony's show. So my ex-fiance was a magnet for spiritual energy. So when she started coming to my house, then that's when some stuff started showing up. Like, my house was already haunted. I was familiar with that spirit. It wasn't anything malevolent or anything like that. He would just walk around. He was stuck in my hallway.
He was a roommate.
Yeah. You could feel the energy. It was a guy. Like, I always feel somebody like staring, but it's because he's stuck in my hallway. I had other people come over to my house that were legit mediums, and they identified the same thing. So I was like, oh, okay. So I know it's nothing to worry about.
Yeah.
But when she started coming
over. Pay rent this month though, please.
Yeah. Yeah. Help me out. But when she came over, she started bringing in these different spirits where things would, like, they were mischievous. Mm-hmm. They would turn on fans and turn them off, and the fan isn't even plugged in, or they're I'd be trying to lay down at night and it would sound like somebody did like the Macho Man Randy Savage elbow drop right in the middle of the floor. We had wood floors.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just like boom in the middle of the night, and I wake up like, what was that? Right. And I look outside, nothing's there, but I feel this electricity in the air. Mm-hmm. So stuff like that. But the most interesting experience in that house with that spirit that I was talking about. We were sleeping in bed, and I had gotten up. I felt this like I was being electrocuted. Mm-hmm. And I had opened my eyes in the middle of the night, and I had gotten up and sat up, and then I kept going, and I went all the way over my own feet. So I was like, what's going on here? Because I know I'm not that flexible. So yeah. I was like, I was all the way over my own feet. And I saw my ex-fiance's head. So she was sleeping next to me. But her head was at my feet. And I found that really weird. And then I started floating up. So I was like, oh, this is some projection stuff. Like, this is some astral projection stuff right now. And I became lucid. And then I looked around, and in the corner of the bedroom, there was this negative, I would say, you know, like a photo negative, mm-hmm. where everything is black, the eyes are black, the pupils are white. There was this, like, it looked like a monkey gorilla hybrid thing sitting in the corner of my room, mm-hmm. staring at her. And so I looked at it, and then it looked at me. And as soon as it looked at me, the entire room started strobing. Whoa. So I'm up here in this astral body. I'm floating up in the air with this astral body, looking at this thing. I'm speaking to it telepathically. Who the fuck are you, man? Right. And it looks at me like, what are you going to do about it? I was like, get out of here. I'm challenging it. Like, get out of here. And it comes up real close to me, like face to face, and it starts trying to choke me.
Wow.
So I end up, like, I just muster whatever astral energy I've got.
Yeah.
And I come and I go to try and choke it, and I push it out, and it goes through my wall, through my window, into the yard, out of my bedroom, into the yard. And it turns around and it looks at me like, I'll be back. I'll be back. But it left us alone. And it was an intense fight. Like, everything was strobing my heartbeat. So it's just like, so I came back as soon as it left. I came back and I floated back and I got sucked back into my body, and I opened my eyes and I wake up, and what confirmed that this was real to me was that she was laying down next to me and her head was at my feet.
Mm-hmm.
And when we had fallen asleep that night, we had fallen asleep in normal positions.
Right.
So yeah. So I look at her and her head was at my feet. So I was like, oh, I was seeing reality.
Totally.
So I woke her up, told her to bring her head back here, and we were good.
And then you're like, and after that, we went our separate ways.
Yeah. well, so interesting side story to that, a little follow-up to that. Years later, we had broken up, and I had met my now wife, and she has a son from a previous relationship, my son. Mm-hmm. Jacob, and he was about 2 years old, and he was in the bedroom and he was trying to sleep in my guest room. And so my guest room is the closest room to a certain tree where when I had spoken to a medium that had come to my house to check out what that was, because I had contacted somebody after that whole event. I was I gotta figure this out. Right. So that medium told me that that spirit is connected to a certain tree in my yard. And that tree is always half alive, half dead. So my son Jacob was trying to sleep in that guest room that is closest to that tree. And he came out of the room. This is the first time we were trying to get him to sleep on his own in that guest room. So we made a little fort and everything and made it a fun thing.
Hey, you decked it out.
Yeah. So he was in the room and he ran outside screaming like, somebody's trying to come in the room. And I was like, what? So we both, and he was terrified. Like, I'd never seen him like this.
Yeah.
We went in there and I asked him again, like, what happened? And we're trying to decipher because he's really young, you know, like English is not he doesn't have a mastery of English yet, but he basically told us that he felt like somebody was trying to come in through the window.
Hmm.
It was a man trying to come in through the window. But then we look at the fort and there's no way, because the front of the fort is facing the front door. The window is behind him. So, and it's all closed off. So how does he know that a man was trying to come through the window?
Right.
And then, so we were standing there trying to figure it out, and the wind blows, and my now wife, Diana, she screams, and I look at her and she's looking at the window. I was like, what happened? She goes, I swear to you, I am not making this up, but it looked like a face, like a monkey gorilla thing was trying to come through the curtain.
Yeah.
And I hadn't told her this story before. What happened? So I was like, oh man, this dude is trying to fuck with us. Yeah,
yo, you want to play, bro? Play. So what did you do?
To me, the fact that he was just trying to come through the window, but he was stopped. So to me, what that means is he can no longer come in. When I kicked him out, he can't come back in.
Right. You established the ground rules.
Yeah.
Dude, that's interesting. Is there more to that? I don't want to cut you off. Sorry.
No. That's wild. That was the main event and the follow-up.
That's the stuff that I blows my mind, but also at the same time, I'm like looking behind my curtain now because it's, it's so true though. And my buddy who a guy I'm going to bring on, he's been on the Tony show too, Garrett King.
Oh, okay.
So he's coming on actually on Tuesday. He was, cause I asked him, cause you know how he does the ITC, the photography thing.
Mm-hmm.
I go, and we're just like texting on Instagram. I go, how do you do this without like bringing these spirits in? Like, cause for those who don't know, Garrick's going to be coming on. You'll see it after we do this show. He does ITC. It's not going to be in the podcast we're going to be doing, but it will be in a further podcast that we end up doing. And you could see clear as day in some of these, what spirits and entities are around. There's no question about it. And he goes, when I do it, I always make it clear from the beginning. Like, you are not welcome to stay. You're like, he goes through this whole thing about, he said about like setting intention of like, what is this exchange? What I'm setting the ground rules. And I think that's really interesting. And I was obviously listening to another thing with Tony talking with Dark Waters. And he was like, talking about how someone else brought an energy that followed him home. And he goes, I didn't establish before that in exchange, you know, my ground rules with the spirits. Like, and I was like, that's super interesting. And that's so true. Like, if you don't establish who you are, where you are, what, you know, like, again, ground rules, it pertains to this realm as well as the spirits, you know, moving in between or whatever. It's multiple realms or whatever the case is. So I just think that's super fascinating. Like you said, you're like, I'm going to throw you out and you are not welcome back. Like, you can sit on the perimeter, you can try to get in, but I'm establishing you are not welcome, you know? Yeah. So
yeah, it comes down to having that spiritual ownership of self. Right. And being able to create that boundary. And that becomes a barrier for everyone around you as well.
Totally. Yeah. Dude, and isn't that interesting about, like, you know, when you're so scared, like, usually when you're so scared, what is happening, right? Like, there's a sense of, like, you lose control of self. Like, you're so frightened at literally your spirit, your breath, your aloha, all that stuff gets, you know, like, you know, you're petrified, right? And I think that's super fascinating to think about, right? Is like, you know, when you, as crazy and scary as things may be, if you lose sight of who you are, your spirit, your breath, all those things, that's literally when you open yourself up for all these energetic or spiritual warfare, right? And it's no different than what we're seeing with all the mainstream stuff of, like, knowing, like, hey, I'm in this vessel, but my breath, my spirit is what I am and who I am. So I think that's just, it starts to create bigger conversations too.
Yeah, man.
But like,
little side tangent regarding that, because you're talking about that spiritual ownership. So the same medium that came by my house to, you know, basically tell me about the spirits in the house and everything. And just little thing, I trust him because I knew that my grandma, so that house that I was living in, my grandparents had lived in there before, and then I moved in, and it became my place. And I knew that this medium was legit because he came over to the house and perfectly described my grandma, because I knew my grandma's spirit was in the kitchen. Right. And I could feel it all the time, but he came in and he confirmed it and he described it perfectly.
Right.
So little credence to him. But yeah, so he told me about my aura. And when I was younger, I was taught that if you get scared or if you start feeling afraid, you breathe, you bring yourself back in, and then create a bubble around you. And I would always imagine a red bubble. So my bubble is like a bubble of knives. It just comes out, right?
Right.
And it just keeps you away. Don't mess with me. I just want to be left alone. Mm-hmm. And so I'd imagine that. And that would usually be my protection. So this medium, when he comes to the house, he actually took us out to Aleva Heights, which is up the hill from where my house was. And he likes this certain park. He likes to do his meditations at a certain park because the energy there is good. So he took us there. It was nighttime. And I was feeling some heebie-jeebie vibes. So I put my red bubble on. And this dude, like, he turns around and he goes, "Red spikes." And I was like, "Yeah, man." And he goes, "Yeah, so you feeling alarmed? Are you feeling okay? I feel like like you're stabbing me right now." I was like, "This dude, how do you know,
man?" Wow. It's so true though, man. It's so true. To piggyback on that, one of my fiance's friends, well, her sister's friend that they went to school with, his brother did the same thing. And you know, he's legit too, man. Like, he was saying that, like, when my sister-in-law, basically, when they were living in their house in California and they were here visiting, they're like, our daughter, when she was like two at the time, she's 11 or something, like, she's experiencing stuff. Like, we don't know what's going on. So he goes, "Okay, give me a second." In Hawaii, they never talked about their house. They never described the house, none of it. And sister-in-law is very, like, kind of one of those people. Like, so she's not going to tell us the story if it's not true. Goes and describes the entire house to a T.
Wow.
From Hawaii. He's like, "Okay, I'm in your front door. I see this. And they're like, "Am I right?" They're like, "Yeah, that's spot on." He's like, "Okay, I'm going to your daughter. The first right, I'm assuming that's your daughter's room. Yours is the back one." "Yeah. Okay. I'm in a room. I see the bunk beds. Okay. And I see the crib. Okay. Yeah." And he's like, and he goes, basically, he's like, "I see the energy. I'm with it." He's like, "Yeah, it's intense." I'm paraphrasing. I don't remember exactly what he said to them.
Yeah.
But he did this whole thing and he was like, "Okay, you should be good. Like, it's gone. Like, I made it sure it left." Sure enough, dude, they never experienced it to this day. When we were here, we moved into this place. We're renting, but you know, long story short, it was like, we had medium come blessed, all this stuff. And it was like, just wild, because you're just like, he's like, yeah, man, there's energies. Yeah, I could feel him. And he did this whole thing. And it was just like, whoa, this is pretty crazy, man. And it just, it makes you realize that like, there's stuff all around us all the time. And what our idea of this realm in trying to process and break down is so far off, man. And we're so discombobulated that we have no idea, you know, what's happening all around us all the time, man. And that's, for me, been one of those moments where I'm just trying to take it all in, be respectful, be appreciative. But like you said, to your point of like establishing like where I stand on certain things, if I feel those energies speaking out, expressing where I am and what ground rules I'm setting. So,
yeah, this is all mood tech. So this is the kind of stuff that, that I am fascinated by personally. And I wish to train in, you know, to, because I think, I honestly believe anybody who is human can do this. And and why I love so much to dig into the spiritual side of ancient Hawaiian culture and how we are connected to other indigenous cultures is because there is this spiritual technology that is just, it's fascinating. I've heard mo'olelo of, so there's a heiau in Waimea called Mahuka Heiau. Yeah. And it's over. Yeah. You've been there before?
Yeah.
Okay. So Mahuka Heiau. So if you read the I think they have it on that sign that they have there, the information sign. Where they used to light fires there to communicate with Kauai. Because you could see it from Kauai back when there was no light pollution. The mo'olelo I heard is that they would light the fire there as like a phone. So letting you know, like, hey, I want to talk.
Right.
Fire, and then Kauai lights a fire. Okay, communication's open, and then they would communicate telepathically.
Whoa!
So the kahunas would do that. They would communicate with each other.
Kahuna
were so in tune with everything, and this is why I feel that relationship to the land is so important to in the ancient culture, is because the land actually provides you the energy to do this. The land is your connection. The land is your ground, your literal grounding in the spiritual internet. So you can travel around in all of these places. If you go to these spots with certain frequencies that are coming out of the land, pohaku end up becoming antenna or transmitters. That's why pohaku are so important, and why all the walls of the heiau are built with no mortar. Because mortar is insulation. If you have rock making contact with rock, resonance can continue. And so these heiau become giant amplifiers for the energy where you can now tap in and communicate telepathically.
Bro, so true, man. And think about how much in our society we're getting people, or they're trying to create these offers of getting people off of land, getting out of the soil, getting out of, like you said, connection with the rocks, you know, the water, the vibrations of everything. Because once you do that, shoes, you know, they're insulators, man. You're unable to tap into that etheric energy truly, because you don't have the grounding force where it is able to amplify. You know what I mean? And that's something they're definitely showing, revealing more in movies and their shows about like what's going on. And it is quite fascinating when you have a wherewithal to know what's, this realm is more than we've been told. You can then have at least some understanding when you see it and going, oh, this is a reveal of some kind of these things that you're speaking of. And it's not just stories made up, right? This idea of like, oh, these are just stories. These are just stories. It's like, those are the stories that I'm going to listen to, because those are more accurate than everything that you just told me, which, you know, come to find out these mainstream narratives, again, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater, but they don't have much validity. They have pieces, they have gems, but it's knowing how to discern what that is, man. I love this stuff, dude. I didn't realize we were going this, because usually it'd take like an hour to hour and a half, but I'm going to have to wrap up on my end, but would love to have you back, man. I would love to keep talking. There's so many other things I would love to bring up. Like I said, portals, Pearl City, all these other things. So there's so much more that I can dive into, but where's the best place for people to find you?
Find me on Instagram. Haoli art, Haoli underscore art underscore Alika. Yep. So I'm a friend of Pat Life, so you can go ahead and check out Pat Life and find me through that.
I'll put you on the show notes too, so that way it's easy for people to find you.
You can also check out haoliart.com. That has my products, clothing. I will be updating it soon. It's been kind of stagnant for a while, and I feel like it's time to freshen it up a bit. So I'll be adding more stuff to it soon as we start coming out with more games.
Awesome.
As well as theorycraftist.com.
Theorycraftist.com.
That is the game design company name.
Awesome, man. I love it. And I'm going to be buying some merch, man, because I want to represent. When people are here, if people know, they'll be like, this guy gets it. Or if they don't know, I'll show them and be like, now you get it. but that's awesome, man. Well, I appreciate your time. I appreciate your insights. I hope everyone enjoyed as much as I did. But on that, thank you for joining us. And Alika, we'll see you again soon, man.
Okay, man. Ahoy ho.
All right.